I say, "Itches," Manchie says. "Stupid dog." I scratch his ears. "Stupid ruddy dog." Viola pets him too, trying to keep him from licking off the bandage. "Do you think we're safe?" she asks quietly after a long minute. "I don't know." There's more bangs out in the distance. We both jump. More people shouting. More noise. "No sign of Hildy since this started," Viola says. "I know." Another bit of silence as we overpet Manchie. More ruckus from up in the orchards above town. It all seems so far away, as if it's not even happening. "Francia told me that you can find haven if you keep following the main river," Viola says. I look at her. I wonder if I know what this means. I think I do. "You want to leave?" I say. "They'll keep coming," she says. "We're putting the people around us in danger. Don't you think they'll keep coming if they've already come this far?" I do. I do think this. I don't say it, but I do. "But they said they could protect us," I say. "Do you believe that?" I don't say nothing to this neither. I think of Matthew Lyle. "I don't think we're safe here anymore," she says. "I don't think we're safe anywhere," I say. "Not on this whole planet." "I need to contact my ship, Todd," she says, almost pleading. "They're waiting to hear from me." "And you want to run off into the unknown to do it?" "You do too," she says. "I can tell." She looks away. "If we went together..." I look up at her at this, trying to see, trying to know real and true. All she does is look back, which is enough. "Let's go," I say. We pack fast without any more words. I get my rucksack on, she gets her bag around her shoulders. Manchie's on his feet again and walking, and out the back door we go. As simple as that, we're going. Safer for Far Branch, definitely. Safer for us, who knows? Who knows if this is the right thing to do? After what Hildy and Francia seem to promise, it's hard leaving. But we're leaving, and that's what we're doing. 'Cause at least it's us who decided it. I'd rather not have no one else tell me what they'll do for me, even when they mean well. It's full dark night outside now, though both moons are shining bright. Everyone in town's attention is behind us, so there's no one to stop us from running. There's a little bridge that crosses the creek that runs through town. "How far is this haven?" I ask, whispering as we cross.
"Kind of far,"
Viola whispers back.
"How far is kind of far?"
She don't say nothing for a second.
"How far?"
I say again.
"Couple of weeks' walk," she says,
not looking back.
"Couple of weeks? Where else do we have?"
she says. And I don't have an answer, so we keep on walking. Across the creek, the road heads up the far hill of the valley. We decide to take it as the fastest way out of town, then find our way back south to the river and follow that. Ben's map ends at Far Branch, so the river's all we got for directions from here on out. There's so many askins that come with us as we run out of Far Branch. Askins that we'll never know the answers to. Why would the mayor and a few men go miles out of their way to attack a whole ruddy town on their own? Why are they still after us? Why are we so important? And what happened to Hildy? And did I kill Matthew Lyle? And was what he showed me in his noise right there at the end a true thing? Was that the real history of Prentice Town?
Was what the real history?
Viola asks as we hurry on up the path.
Nothing, I say, and quit reading me.
We get to the top of the far hill on the valley just as another rattle of gunfire echoes across it. We stop and look. And then we see. Boy, do we see.
Oh, my God,
Viola says. Under the light of the two moons, the whole valley kind of shines, across the Far Branch buildings and back up into the hills where the orchards are. We can see the men and women of Far Branch running back down that hill, in retreat, and marching over the top are 5, 10, 15 men on horseback, followed by rows of men 5 across, carrying guns, marching in a line behind what has to be the mayor's horses in front.
Not a posse.
Not a posse at all. It's Prentistown. I feel like the whole world's crumbling at my feet. It's every ruddy man in Prentistown. They have three times as many people as even live in Far Branch. Three times as many guns. We hear gunshots, and we see the men and women of Far Branch fall as they run back to their houses. They'll take the town easily. They'll take it before the hour's through. 'Cause the rumors were true. The rumors that Francia heard. The word was true. It's an army. A whole army. There's a whole army coming after me and Viola. Part 4. 20. Army of Men. We duck behind some bushes, even though it's dark, even though the army is across the valley, even though they don't know we're up here and there's no way they could hear my noise amidst all the ruckus going on down there. We duck anyway.
"Can your binocs see in the dark?" I whisper.
By way of answer, Viola digs them out of her bag and holds them up to her own eyes.
"What's happening?"
she says, looking through them, pressing more buttons.
"Who are all those men?"
"It's Prentistown," I say, holding out my hand. "It looks like every man in the whole effing town."
"How can it be the whole town?"
She looks for a second or two more, then hands the binocs to me.
"What kind of sense does that make?"
"You got me?" The night setting on the binocs turns the valley and all that's in it a bright green. I see horses galloping down the hill into the main part of town, the riders shooting their rifles on the way. I see the people of Far Branch shooting back, but mostly running, mostly falling, mostly dying. The Prentistown army don't seem interested in taking prisoners.
"We have to get out of here, Todd," Viola says.
"Yeah," I say, but I'm still looking through the binocs. With everything green, it's hard to make out faces. I press a few more buttons on the binocs till I find the ones that take me in closer. The first person I see for sure is Mr. Prentice Jr. in the lead, firing his rifle into the air when he don't have nothing else to shoot at. Then there's Mr. Morgan and Mr. Collins chasing some Far Branch men into the storage barns, firing their rifles after them. Mr. O'Hare's there, too, and more of the mayor's usual suspects on horseback, Mr. Edwin, Mr. Henratty, Mr. Sullivan, and there's Mr. Hammer, the smile on his face showing up green and evil even from this distance as he fires his rifle into the backs of fleeing women hustling away small children, and I have to look away or throw up the nothing I had for dinner. The men on foot march their way into town. The first one I recognize is, of all people, Mr. Phelps, the storekeeper. Which is weird, 'cause he never seemed army-like at all. And there's Dr. Baldwin, and Mr. Fox, and Mr. Cardiff, who was our best milker, and Mr. Tate, who had the most books to burn when the mayor outlawed them, and Mr. Kearney, who milled the town's wheat and who always spoke softly and who made wooden toys for each Prentistown boy's birthday.
What are these men doing in an army?
Todd,
Viola says, pulling at my arm. The men marching don't look none too happy, I suppose. Grim and cold and scary in a different way from Mr. Hammer, like they're lacking all feeling. But they're still marching. They're still shooting. They're still kicking down doors.
That's Mr. Galooly,
I say, binocs pressed to my eyes.
He can't even butcher his own meat.
Todd,
Viola says, and I feel her backing away from the bushes.
Let's go.
What's going on? Sure, Prentistown was as awful a place as you could ever not want to paint it, but how can it suddenly be an army? There's plenty of Prentistown men who are bad through and through, but not all of them. Not all. And Mr. Galooly with a rifle is a sight so wrong it almost hurts my eyes just to look at it. And then, of course, I see the answer. Mayor Prentice, not even holding a gun, just one hand on his horse's reins, the other at his side, riding into town like he's out for an evening canter. He's watching the route of Far Branch as if it was a vid, and not a very interesting one at that, letting everyone else do the work, but so obviously in charge, no one would even think of asking him to break a sweat. How can he make so many men do what he wants? And is he bulletproof that he can ride so fearlessly?
Todd, Viola says behind me, I swear I'll leave without you.
No, you won't, I say. One more second. 'Cause I'm looking from face to face now, ain't I? I'm going from Prentistown man to Prentistown man. 'Cause even if they're marching into town and are gonna find out soon enough that neither me nor Viola is there and are gonna have to come this way after us, I gotta know. I gotta know. Face to face as they march and shoot and burn. Mr. Wallace, Mr. Asbjornsen, Mr. St. James, Mr. Belgraves, Mr. Smith the older, Mr. Smith the younger, Mr. Smith with 9 fingers, even Mr. Majoribanks, wobbling and teetering, but marching, marching, marching. Prentistown man after Prentistown man after Prentistown man. My heart clenching and burning at each one I can identify.
They ain't there, I say almost to myself.
Who isn't?
Viola says.
Ain't!
Manchie barks, licking at his tail.
They ain't there.
Ben and Killian ain't there. Which, of course, is grand, ain't it? Of course they ain't part of an army of killers. Of course they ain't. Even when every other Prentistown man is, they wouldn't be. Not never. Not know how, no matter what. Good men. Great men, both. Even Killian. But if that's true, then that means the other is true, too, don't it? If they ain't there, then that means once and for all. And there's your lesson. There ain't nothing good that don't got real bad waiting to follow it. I hope they put up the best fight ever. I take the binocs from my face, and I look down, and I wipe my eyes with my sleeve, and I turn, and I hand Viola back the binocs and say, let's go. She takes them from me, squirming a little like she's itching to leave, but then she says, I'm sorry. So she must have seen it in my noise. Nothing that ain't already happened, I say, talking to the ground and readjusting the rucksack. Come on, before I put us in danger any worse. I take off up the path toward the top of the hill, keeping my head down, motoring fast, Viola after me, Manchie trying to keep himself from biting at his tail as we run. Viola matches my speed before we get far at all.
Did you see him?
She says between breaths.
Aaron?
She nods.
No, I say. Come to think of it, no, I didn't. And you'd think he'd be out in front.
We're quiet for a minute as we hurry on our way and wonder what that means. The road on this side of the valley is wider, and we're doing our best to keep to the darker side of it as it twists and turns up the hill. Our only lights are the moon's, but they're bright enough to cast our shadows running along the road, which is too bright when you're running away. I never seen no night vision binocs in Prentistown, but I didn't see no army neither, so we're both crouching as we run. Manchie's running on ahead of us, his nose to the ground, barking,
this way! This way!
As if he knows any better than us where we're going. Then, at the top of the hill, the road forks, which just figures.
You gotta be kidding, I say.
One part of the road goes left, the other goes right. Well, it's a fork, ain't it?
The creek in Far Branch was flowing to the right, Viola says, and the main river was always to our right once we crossed the bridge, so it's got to be the right fork if we want to get back there.
But the left looks more traveled, I say, and it does. The left fork looks smoother, flatter, the kind of thing you should be rolling carts over. The right fork is narrower, with higher bushes on each side, and even though it's night, you can just tell it's dusty.
Did Francia say anything about a fork?
I look back over my shoulder at the valley still erupting behind us.
No,
Viola says, also looking back.
She just said Haven was the first settlement, and new settlements sprang up down the river as people moved west. Prentistown was the farthest out. Far Branch was the second farthest.
That one probably goes to the river, I say, pointing right, then left. That one probably goes to Haven in a straight line.
Which one will they think we took?
We need to decide, I say, quickly now.
To the right, she says,
then turns it into an asking.
To the right?
We hear a boom that makes us jump. A mushroom of smoke is rising in the air over Far Branch. The barn where I worked all day is on fire. Maybe our story will turn out differently if we take the left fork. Maybe the bad things that are waiting to happen to us won't happen. Maybe there's happiness at the end of the left fork in warm places with people who love us and no noise, but no silence neither. And there's plenty of food and no one dies and no one dies and no one never, never dies. Maybe. But I doubt it. I ain't what you call a lucky person. Right, I decide. Might as well be right. We run down the right fork, Manchi at our heels, the night and a dusty road stretching out in front of us, an army and a disaster behind us, me and Viola running side by side. We run till we can't run, and then we walk fast till we can run again. The sounds of Far Branch disappear behind us pretty quick, and all we can hear are our footsteps beating on the path, and my noise and Manchi's barking. If there are night creatures out there, we're scaring them away. Which is probably good. What's the next settlement? I gasp after a good half hour's run walking. Did Francia say?
Shining Beacon, Viola says, gasping herself. Or Shining Light.
She scrunches her face.
Blazing Light? Blazing Beacon?
That's helpful.
Wait.
She stops in the path, bending at the waist to catch her breath. I stop, too.
I need water.
I hold up my hands in a way that says, and? So do I say. You got some? She looks at me, her eyebrows up.
Oh, there was always a river. I guess we'd better find it, then.
I guess so. I take a deep breath to start running again.
Todd,
she says, stopping me.
I've been thinking.
Yeah, I say.
Blazing lights or whatever.
Yeah?
If you look at it one way.
She lowers her voice to a sad and uncomfortable sound and says it again.
If you look at it one way, we led an army into Far Branch.
I lick the dryness of my lips. I taste dust. And I know what she's saying.
You must warn them,
she says quietly into the dark.
I'm sorry, but
we can't go into any other settlements, I say.
I don't think we can.
Not till Haven.
Not until Haven, she says, which we have to hope is big enough to handle an army.
So that's that, then. In case we needed any further reminding, we're really on our own, really and truly. Me and Viola and Manchi and the darkness for company. No one on the road to help us till the end, if even there, which no one our luck so far. I close my eyes.
I am Todd Hewitt, I think. When it gets to be midnight, I'll be a man in 27 days. I'm the son of my ma and pa, may they rest in peace. I am the son of Ben and Killian, may they...
I am Todd Hewitt.
I'm Viola Eed,
Viola says. I open my eyes. She has her hand out, palm down, held toward me.
That's my surname, she says. Eed. E-A-D-E.
I look at her for a second, then down at her outstretched hand, and I reach out and take it and press it inside my own, and a second later, I let go. I shrug my shoulders to reset my rucksack. I put my hand behind my back to feel the knife and make sure it's still there. I give poor, panting, half-tail Manchi a look, and then match eyes with Viola. Viola Eed, I say, and she nods. And off we run into further night. 21. The Wider World.
How can it be this far?
Viola asks.
It doesn't make any logical sense.
Is there another kind of sense it does make? She frowns. So do I. We're tired and getting tireder and trying not to think of what we saw at Far Branch and we've walked and run what feels like half the night and still no river. I'm starting to get afraid we've taken a seriously wrong turn, which we can't do nothing about, 'cause there ain't no turning back.
Isn't any turning back,
I hear Viola say behind me, underneath her breath. I turn to her, eyes wide.
That's wrong on two counts, I say. Number one, constantly reading people's noise ain't gonna get you much welcome here.
She crosses her arms and sets her shoulders.
And the second?
The second is I talk how I please.
Yes, Viola says, that you do.
My noise starts to rise a bit, and I take a deep breath, but then she says, shh, and her eyes glint in the moonlight as she looks beyond me. The sound of running water.
River!
Manchi barks. We take off down the road and round a corner, and down a slope, and round another corner, and there's the river, wider, flatter, and slower than when we saw it last, but just as wet. We don't say nothing. We just drop to our knees on the rocks at water's edge and drink, Manchi wading in up to his belly to start lapping. Viola's next to me, and as I slurp away, there's her silence again. It's a two-way thing, this is. However clear she can hear my noise, well, out here alone, away from the chatter of others or the noise of a settlement, there's her silence, loud as a roar, pulling at me like the greatest sadness ever, like I want to take it and press myself into it and just disappear forever down into nothing. What a relief that would feel like right now. What a blessed relief.
I can't avoid hearing you, you know, she says, standing up and opening her bag. When it's quiet and just the two of us.
And I can't avoid not hearing you, I say, no matter what it's like. I whistle for Manchi. Out of the water! There might be snakes. He's ducking his rump under the current, swishing back and forth until the bandage comes off and it floats away. Then he leaps out and immediately sets to licking his tail. Let me see, I say. He barks, Todd, in agreement, but when I come near, he curls his tail as far under his belly as the new length will go. I uncurl it gently, Manchi murmuring, tail, tail, to himself all the while. What do you know, I say, those bandages work on dogs. Viola's fished out two discs from her bag. She presses her thumbs inside them, and they expand right up into water bottles. She kneels by the river, fills both, and tosses one to me. Thanks, I say, not really looking at her. She wipes some water from her bottle. We stand on the riverbank for a second, and she's putting her water bottle back into her bag, and she's quiet in a way that I'm learning means she's trying to say something difficult.
I don't mean any offense by it, she says, looking up to me, but I think maybe it's time I read the note on the map.
I can feel myself redden, even in the dark, and I can also feel myself get ready to argue. But then I just sigh. I'm tired, and it's late, and we're running again, and she's right, ain't she? There's nothing but spitefulness that'll argue she's wrong. I drop my rucksack and take out the book, unfolding the map from inside the front cover. I hand it to her without looking at her. She takes out her flashlight and shines it on the paper, turning it over to Ben's message. To my surprise, she starts reading it out loud, and all of a sudden, even with her own voice, it's like Ben's is ringing down the river, echoing from Prentistown and hitting my chest like a punch.
Go to the settlement down the river and across the bridge, she reads. It's called Far Branch, and the people there should welcome you.
And they did, I say. Some of them. Viola continues.
There are things you don't know about our history, Todd, and I'm sorry for that, but if you knew them, you would be in great danger. The only chance you have of a welcome is your innocence.
I feel myself redden even more, but fortunately it's too dark to see.
Your ma's book will tell you more, but in the meantime, the wider world has to be warned, Todd. Prentistown is on the move. The plan has been in the works for years, only waiting for the last boy in Prentistown to become a man.
She looks up.
Is that you?
That's me, I say. I was the youngest boy. I turned 13 in 27 days and officially become a man according to Prentistown law. and I can't help but think for a minute about what Ben showed me. About how a boy becomes... I cover it up and say quickly, but I got no idea what he means about them waiting for me. The mayor plans to take Far Branch, and who knows what else beyond. Cillian and I... Killian, I correct her, with a K sound. Killian and I will try to delay it as long as we can, but we won't be able to stop it. Far Branch will be in danger, and you have to warn them. Always, always, always remember that we love you like our own son, and sending you away is the hardest thing we'll ever have to do. If it's at all possible, we'll see you again. But first you must get to Far Branch as fast as you can, and when you get there, you must warn them. Ben.
Viola looks up.
That last part is underlined.
I know. And then we don't say nothing for a minute. There's blame in the air, but maybe it's all coming from me. Who can tell with a silent girl? My fault, I say. It's all my fault.
Viola rereads the note to herself.
They should have told you, she says. Not expected you to read it if you can't...
If they told me, Prentistown would have heard it in my noise and known that I knew. We wouldn't have even got the head start we got.
I glance at her eyes and look away. I should have given it to someone to read, and that's all there is to it. Ben's a good man. I lower my voice.
Was.
She refolds the map and hands it back to me. It's useless to us now, but I put it back carefully inside the front cover of the book.
I could read that for you, Viola says. Your mother's book, if you wanted.
I keep my back to her and put the book in my rucksack.
We need to go, I say. We've wasted too much time here.
Todd,
there's an army after us, I say. No more time for reading.
So we set off again and do our best to run for as much and as long as we can, but as the sun rises, all slow and lazy and cold, we've had no sleep, and that's no sleep after a full day's work, and so even with that army on our tails, we're barely able to even keep up a fast walk. But we do, through that next morning. The road keeps following the river as we hoped, and the land starts to flatten out around us, great natural plains of grass stretching out to low hills and to higher hills beyond, and to the north, at least, mountains beyond that. It's all wild, though. No fences, no fields of crops, and no signs of any kind of settlement or people except for the dusty road itself, which is good in one way, but weird in another. If New World isn't supposed to have been wiped out, where is everybody?
You think this is right?
I say, as we come around yet another dusty corner of the road with nothing beyond it but more dusty corners.
You think we're going the right way?
Viola blows out thoughtful air.
My dad used to say, there's only forward, Vi, only outward and up.
There's only forward, I repeat.
Outward and up, she says.
What was he like? I ask. Your pa. She looks down at the road, and from the side, I can see half a smile on her face.
He smelled like fresh bread, she says,
and then she moves on ahead and don't say nothing more. Morning turns to afternoon with more of the same. We hurry when we can, walk fast when we can't hurry, and only rest when we can't help it. The river remains flat and steady like the brown and green land around it. I can see blue hawks way up high, hovering and scouting for prey, but that's about it for signs of life.
This is one empty planet,
Viola says as we stop for a quick lunch, leaning on some rocks overlooking a natural weir.
Oh, it's full enough, I say, munching on some cheese. Believe me.
I do believe you. I just meant I can see why people would want to settle here. Lots of fertile farmland, lots of potential for people to make new lives.
I chew. People would be mistaken. She rubs her neck and looks at Manchi, sniffing around the edges of the weir, probably smelling the wood weavers who made it living underneath.
Why do you become a man here at 13? She asks.
I look over at her, surprised.
What?
That note, she says. The town waiting for the last boy to become a man.
She looks at me.
Why wait?
That's how New World's always done it. It's supposed to be scriptural. Aaron always went on about it, symbolizing the day you eat from the tree of knowledge and go from innocence into sin.
She gives me a funny look. That sounds pretty heavy.
I shrug. Ben said that the real reason was because a small group of people on an isolated planet need all the adults they can get, so 13 is the day you start getting real responsibilities. I throw a stray stone into the river. Don't ask me. All I know is it's 13 years. 13 cycles of 13 months.
13 months?
She asks, her eyebrows up. I nod.
There are only 12 months in a year, she says.
No, there ain't. There's 13.
Maybe not here, she says, but where I come from, there's 12.
I blink. 13 months in a New World year, I say, feeling dumb for some reason. She looks up like she's figuring something out.
I mean, depending on how long a day or a month is on this planet, you might be 14 years old already.
That's not how it works here, I say, kind of stern, not really liking this much. I turn 13 in 27 days.
14 and a month, actually, she says, still figuring it out. Which makes you wonder how you tell how old anybody...
It's 27 days till my birthday, I say firmly. I stand and put the rucksack back on. Come on. We've wasted too much time talking. It ain't till the sun's finally started to dip below the tops of the trees that we see our first sign of civilization. An abandoned water mill at the river's edge. Its roof burned off who knows how many years ago. We've been walking so long, we don't even talk. Don't even look around much for danger. Just go inside, throw our bags down against the walls, and flop to the ground like it's the softest bed ever. Manchi, who don't seem to ever get tired, is busy running around, lifting his leg on all the plants that have grown up through the cracked floorboards. My feet, I say, peeling off my shoes, counting 6 different blisters. Viola lets out a weary sigh from the opposite wall.
We have to sleep, she says, even if...
I know.
She looks at me. You'll hear them coming, she says. If they come?
Oh, I'll hear them, I say. I'll definitely hear them. We decide to take turns sleeping. I say I'll wait up first, and Viola can barely say goodnight before she's out. I watch her sleep as the light fades. The little bit of clean we got at Hildy's house is already long gone. She looks like I must, face smudged with dust, dark circles under her eyes, dirt under her nails. And I start to think. I've only known her for 3 days, you know? 3 effing days out of my whole entire life, but it's like nothing that happened before really happened. Like that was all a big lie just waiting for me to find out. No, not like. It was a big lie waiting for me to find out, and this is the real life now. Running without safety or answer, only moving, only ever moving. I take a sip of water and listen to the crickets chirping, sax, sax, sax. And I wonder what her life was like before these last 3 days. Like, what's it like growing up on a spaceship? A place where there's never any new people. A place you can never get beyond the borders of. A place like Prentice Town, come to think of it, where if you disappeared, you ain't never coming back. I look back over to her. But she did get out, didn't she? She got 7 months out with her ma and pa on the little ship that crashed. How's that work, I wonder?
You need to send scout ships out ahead to make local field surveys and find the best landing sites, she says, without sitting up or even moving her head. How does anyone ever sleep in a world with noise?
You get used to it, I say. But why so long? Why 7 months?
That's how long it takes to set up first camp,
She covers her eyes with her hand in an exhausted way. My mother and father and I were supposed to find the best place for the ships to land and build the first encampment, and then we'd start building the first things that would be needed for settlers just landing. A control tower, a food store, a clinic. She looks at me, twixt her fingers. It's standard procedure. I never seen no control tower on New World, I say. This makes her sit up.
I know. I can't believe you guys don't even have communicators between settlements.
So you're not church settlers, then, I say, sounding wise.
What does that have to do with anything? She says. Why would any reasonable church want to be cut off from itself?
Ben said that they came to this world for the simpler life. Said that there was even a fight in the early days whether to destroy the fission generators. Viola looks horrified.
You would have all died.
That's why they weren't destroyed, I shrug. Not even after Mayor Prentice decided to get rid of most everything else. Viola rubs her shins and looks up into the stars coming out through the hole that was the roof.
My mother and father were so excited, she says. A whole new world. A whole new beginning. All these plans of peace and happiness.
She stops. I'm sorry it ain't that way, I say. She looks down at her feet.
Would you mind waiting outside for a little while until I fall asleep?
Yeah, I say. No problem. I take my rucksack and go out the opening where the front door used to be. Manchi gets up from where he's curled and follows me. When I sit down, he recurls by my legs and falls asleep, farting happily and giving a doggy sigh. Simple to be a dog. I watch the moons rise, the stars following him, the same moons and the same stars as were in Prentice Town, still out here past the end of the world. I take out the book again, the oil in the cover shining from the moonlight. I flip through the pages. I wonder if my ma was excited to land here. I wonder if her head was full of peace and good hope and joy everlasting. I wonder if she found any before she died. This makes my chest heavy, so I put the book back in the rucksack and lean my head against the boards of the mill. I listen to the river flow past and the leaves shush into themselves in the few trees around us, and I look at the shadows of far distant hills on the horizon and the rustling forests on them. I'll wait for a few minutes, then go back inside and make sure Viola's okay. The next thing I know, she's waking me up, and it's hours later, and my head is completely confused till I hear her saying,
"Noise, Todd. I can hear noise."
I'm on my feet before I'm fully awake, quieting Viola and a groggy Manchi barking his complaints. They get quiet, and I put my ear into the night.
Whisper, whisper, whisper.
There. Like a breeze.
Whisper, whisper, whisper.
No words, and far away but hovering, a storm cloud behind a mountain.
Whisper, whisper, whisper.
We gotta go, I say, already reaching for my rucksack.
Is it the army?
Viola calls, running through the door of the mill as she grabs her own bag.
Army!
Manchi barks.
Don't know,
I say. Probably.
Could it be the next settlement?
Viola comes back, bag around her shoulders.
We can't be too far from it.
Then why didn't we hear it when we got here? She bites her lip.
Damn.
Yeah, I say. Damn. And so the second night after Far Branch passes like the first, running in darkness, using flashlights when we need them, trying not to think. Just before the sun comes up, the river moves out of the flats and into another small valley like the one by Far Branch, and sure enough, there's blazing beacons or whatever, so maybe there really are people living out this way. They've got orchards, too, and fields of wheat, though nothing looks near as well tended as Far Branch. Lucky for us, the main part of the town is on top of the hill with what looks like a bigger road going through it. The Left Fork, maybe, and five or six buildings, most of which could use a coat of paint. Down on our dirt road by the river, there are just boats and wormy-looking docks and dock houses and whatever else you build on a flowing river. We can't ask anyone for help. Even if we got it, the army's coming, ain't it? We should warn them, but what if they're Matthew Lyles rather than Hildes? And what if by warning them we draw the army right to them, 'cause then we're in everyone's noise? And what if the settlement knows we're the reason the army's coming and they decide to turn us over to them? But they deserve to be warned, don't they? But what if that endangers us? You see? What's the right answer? And so we sneak through the settlement like thieves, running from dock house to dock house, hiding from sight from the town up the hill, waiting as quiet as we can when we see a skinny woman taking a basket into a hen house up by some trees. It's small enough that we get through it before the sun even fully rises, and we're out the other side and back on the road like it never existed, like it never happened, even to us.
So that's that settlement, then,
Viola whispers as we take a look behind us and watch it disappear behind a bend.
We'll never even know what it was actually called. And now we really don't know what's ahead of us, I whisper back. We keep going until we get to Haven.
And then what?
She don't say nothing to that.
That's a lot of faith we're putting in a word, I say.
There's got to be something, Todd,
she says, her face kind of grim.
There has to be something there.
I don't say nothing for a second, and then I say, I guess we'll see. And so starts another morning. Twice on the road we see men with horse-drawn carts. Both times we hie off into the woods, Viola with her hand around Manchie's snout and me trying to keep my noise as Prentice-town free as possible till they pass. Nothing much changes as the hours go by. We don't hear no more whispers from the army, if that's what it even was. But there ain't no point in finding out for sure, is there? Morning's turned into afternoon again when we see a settlement high up on a far hill. We're coming up a little hill ourselves, the river dropping down a bit, though we can see it spreading out in the distance, what looks like the start of a plain we're going to have to cross. Viola points her binocs at the settlement for a minute, then hands them to me. It's 10 or 15 buildings this time, but even from a distance, it looks scrubby and run down.
I don't get it, Viola says. Going by a regular schedule of settlement, subsistence farming should be years over by now. And there's obviously trade, so why is there still this much struggle?
You don't really know nothing about settlers' lives, do you? I say, chafing just a little. She purses her lips.
It was required in school. I've been learning about how to set up a successful colony since I was 5.
Schooling ain't life.
Ain't it?
She says, her eyebrows raising in mock surprise.
What did I say before? I snap back. Some of us were busy surviving and couldn't learn about subdivided farming.
Subsistence.
Don't care. I get myself moving again on the road. Viola stomps after me.
We're going to be teaching you all a thing or two when my ship arrives, she says. You can be sure of that.
Well, won't we dumb hicks be lining up to kiss your behinds in thankfulness, I say, my noise buzzing and not saying behinds.
Yes, you will be.
She's raising her voice.
Trying to turn back the clock to the Dark Ages has really worked out for you, hasn't it? When we get here, you'll see how people are supposed to settle.
That's 7 months from now, I seethe at her. You'll have plenty of time to see how the other half live.
Todd!
Manchie barks, making us jump again, and suddenly he takes off down the road ahead of us.
Manchie! I yell after him. Get back here!
And then we both hear it. 22. Wilf and the Sea of Things.
It's weird. Noise, but almost wordless.
Cresting the hill in front of us and rolling down. Single-minded, but talking in legions. Like 1,000 voices singing the same thing.
Yeah. Singing.
What is it?
Viola asks, spooked as I am.
It's not the army, is it? How could they be in front of us?
Todd!
Manchie barks from the top of the small hill.
Cows, Todd! Giant cows!
Viola's mouth twists.
Giant cows?
No idea, I say, and I'm already heading up the little hill, 'cause the sound...
How can I describe it? Like... how stars might sound, or moons, but not mountains,
too floaty for mountains. It's a sound like one planet singing to another, high and stretched and full of different voices, starting at different notes and sloping down to other different notes, but all weaving together in a rope of sound that's sad, but not sad, and slow, but not slow, and all singing one word. One word. We reach the top of the hill and another plane unrolls below us, the river tumbling down to meet it and then running through it like a vein of silver through a rock, and all over the plain, walking their way from one side of the river to the other, are creatures. Creatures I've never seen the like of in my life. Massive they are, 12 feet tall if they're an inch, covered in shaggy, silvery fur with a thick, fluff tail at one end and a pair of curved white horns at the other, reaching right out of their brows and long necks that stretch down from wide shoulders to the grass of the plain below, and these wide lips that mow it up as they trudge on dry ground and drink water as they cross the river. And there's thousands of them, thousands stretching from the horizon on our right to the horizon on our left, and the noise of them all is singing one word, at different times and different notes, but one word binding them all together, knitting them as a group as they cross the plain.
Here, Viola says from somewhere off to my side, they're singing here. They're singing, here,
calling it from one to another in their noise.
Here,
I am.
Here,
we are.
Here,
we go.
Here,
is all that matters.
Here,
it's, can I say? It's like the song of a family where everything's always all right. It's a song of belonging that makes you belong just by hearing it. It's a song that'll always take care of you and never leave you. If you have a heart, it breaks. If you have a heart that's broken, it fixes. It's... wow. I look at Viola, and she has her hand over her mouth, and her eyes are wet, but I can see a smile through her fingers. And I open my mouth to speak.
"You won't get very far on foot,"
says a completely other voice to our left. We spin around to look, my hand going right to my knife. A man driving an empty cart pulled by a pair of oxen regards us from a little side path, his mouth left hanging open like he forgot to close it. There's a shotgun on the seat next to him, like he just put it there. From a distance, Manchi barks,
"Go!"
"There's all go-round carts," says the man. "But not save on foot, They'll squash you right up."
And again, leaves his mouth open. His noise, buried under all the
ears
from the herd, seems to pretty much be saying exactly what his mouth is. I'm trying so hard not to think of certain words, I'm already getting a headache.
"I can give yous all a ride throughs," he says, "if you want."
He raises an arm and points down the road, which disappears under the feet of the herd crossing it. I hadn't even thought about how the creatures would be blocking our way, but you can see how you wouldn't want to try walking through them. I turn and I start to say something, anything that'll be the fastest way to get away, but instead the most amazing thing happens. Viola looks at the man and says,
"I'm Hildy."
She points at me.
"That's Ben."
"What?" I say, barking it almost like Manchi.
"Wilf,"
says the man to Viola, and it takes a second to realize he's saying his name.
"Hi, Wilf,"
Viola says, and her voice ain't her own, ain't her own at all. There's a whole new voice coming out of her mouth, stretching and shortening itself, twisting and unraveling, and the more she talks, the more different she sounds. The more she sounds like Wilf.
"We're all for Far Branch. Where are you from?"
Wilf hangs his thumb back over his shoulder.
"Bar Vista," he says. "I'm gone Broccoli Falls pick on some supplies."
"Well, that's lucky,"
Viola says.
We're gone Broccoli Falls, too.
This is making my headache worse. I put my hands up to my temples, like I'm trying to keep my noise inside, trying to keep all the wrong things from spilling out into the world. Luckily, the song of "Ear" has made it like we're already swimming in sound.
Hop on, Wilf says with a shrug. Come on, Ben,
Viola says, walking to the back of the cart and hoisting her bag on top.
Wilf's gonna give us a ride.
She jumps on the cart, and Wilf snaps the reins on his oxen. They take off slowly, and Wilf don't even look at me as he passes. I'm still standing there in amazement when Viola goes by, waving her hand frantically to me to get on beside her. I don't got no choice, do I? I catch up and pull myself up into the cart. I sit down next to her and stare at her with my jaw down around my ankles.
What are you doing?
I finally hiss in what's supposed to be a whisper.
Shh,
she shushes, looking back over her shoulder at Wilf, but he could have already forgotten he picked us up for all that's going on in his noise.
I don't know, she whispers by my ear. Just play along. Play along with what?
If we can get to the other side of the herd, then it's between us and the army, isn't it?
I hadn't thought about that.
But what are you doing? What do Ben and Hildy got to do with it?
He has a gun, she whispers, checking on Wilf again. And you said yourself how people might react about you being from a certain place, so it just sort of popped out.
But you were talking in his voice.
Not very well.
Good enough,
I say, my voice going a little loud with amazement.
Shh,
she says a second time. But with the combo of the herd of creatures getting closer by the second, and Wilf's obvious not-too-brightness, we might as well be having a normal conversation.
How do you do it?
I say, still pouring surprise out all over her.
It's just lying, Todd,
she says, trying to shush me again with her hands.
Don't you have lying here?
Well, of course we have lying here. New World and the town where I'm from, avoiding saying the name, avoiding thinking the name, seem to be nothing but lies. But that's different. I said it before. Men lie all the time, to themselves, to other men, to the world at large. But who can tell when the lie's a strand and all the other lies and truths floating around out of your head? Everyone knows you're lying, but everyone else is lying too, so how can it matter? What does it change? It's just part of the river of a man, part of his noise, and sometimes you can pick it out, sometimes you can't. But he never stops being himself when he does it. 'Cause all I know about Viola is what she says. The only truth I got is what comes out of her mouth. And so for a second back there, when she said she was Hildy and I was Ben, and we were from Far Branch, and she spoke just like Wilf, even though he ain't from Far Branch. It was like all those things became true. Just for an instant, the world changed. Just for a second, it became made of Viola's voice, and it wasn't describing a thing. It was making a thing. It was making us different just by saying it. Oh, my head.
Todd! Todd!
Manchi barks, popping up at the end of the cart, looking up through our feet.
Todd!
Crap,
Viola says. I hop off the cart and sweep him up in my arms, putting one hand around his muzzle, using the other to get back on the cart.
Todd!
He puffs through closed lips.
Quiet, Manchi,
I say.
I'm not even sure it matters,
Viola says, her voice stretching out. I look up.
Todd!
Manchi says. A creature is walking right past us. We've entered the herd, entered the song. And for a little while, I forget all about any kind of lies. I've never seen the sea, only in vids. No lakes where I grew up neither, just the river and the swamp. There may have been boats once, but not in my lifetime. But if I had to imagine being on the sea, this is what I'd imagine. The herd surrounds us and takes up everything, leaving just the sky and us. It cuts around us like a current, sometimes noticing us, but more usually noticing only itself in the song of "Ear." which in the midst of it is so loud, it's like it's taken over the running of your body for a while, providing the energy to make your heart beat and your lungs breathe. After a while, I find myself forgetting all about Wilf and the other things I could think about, and I'm just lying back on the cart, watching it all go by, individual creatures snuffling around, feeding, bumping each other now and again with their horns. And there's baby ones, too, and old bulls, and taller ones, and shorter ones, and some with scars, and some with scruffier fur. Viola's laying down next to me, and Manchi's little doggy brain is overwhelmed by it all, and he's just watching the herd go by with his tongue hanging out, and for a little while, as Wilf drives us over the plain, this is all there is in the world. This is all there is. I look over at Viola, and she looks back at me, and just smiles, and shakes her head, and wipes away the wet from her eyes.
We're here,
and nowhere else, 'cause there's nowhere else but
here.
So this... Aaron, Viola says after a while in a low voice, and I know exactly why it's now that she brings him up. It's so safe inside the
here.
We can talk about any dangers we like. Yeah, I say, also keeping my voice low, watching a little family of creatures waltz by the end of the cart, the ma creature nuzzling forward a curious baby creature who's staring at us. Viola turns to me from where she's laying down. Aaron was your holy man? I nod. Our one and only. What kind of things did he preach?
The usual, I say. Hellfire, damnation, judgment.
She eyes me up. I'm not sure that's the usual, Todd.
I shrug.
He believed we were living through the end of the world, I say.
Who's to say he was wrong?
She shakes her head. That's not what the preacher we had on the ship was like. Pastor Mark. He was kind and friendly. He made everything seem like it was going to be okay.
I snort. No, that don't sound like Aaron at all. He was always saying, God hears, and if one of us falls, we all fall. Like he was looking forward to it.
I heard him say that too.
She crosses her arms over herself.
The here
wraps us still, flowing everywhere. I turn to her. Did he hurt you? Back in the swamp?
She shakes her head again and lets out a sigh.
He ranted and raved at me, and I guess it might have been preaching, but if I ran, he'd run after me and rant some more, and I'd cry and ask him for help. But he'd ignore me and preach some more, and I'd see pictures of myself in his noise when I didn't even know what noise was. I've never been so scared in my life, not even when our ship was crashing.
We both look up into the sun.
If one of us falls, we all fall, she says. What does that even mean?
Which, when I really think about it, I realize I don't know, and so I don't say nothing, and we just sink back into the...
and let it take us a little further.
Here.
We are. Not nowhere else. After an hour, or a week, or a second, the creatures start thinning, and we come out the other side of the herd.
Manchi jumps down off the cart. We're going slow enough that there's no danger of him getting left behind, so I let him. We're not through laying there on the cart just yet.
That was amazing.
Viola says quietly, 'cause the song is already starting to disappear.
I forgot all about how much my feet hurt.
Yeah, I say.
What were those?
Them big things,
Wilf says, not turning round.
Just things, that's all.
Viola and I look at each other, like we forgot he was even there.
How much have we given away?
Them things got a name?
Viola asks.
sitting up, acting her lie again.
"Aw, sure,"
Wilf says, giving the oxen freer rein now that we're out of the herd.
"Packy vines, or field based, or anaphant."
We see him shrug from behind.
"I just call 'em thangs, that's all."
"Thangs," Viola says. "Things," I try. Wilf looks back over his shoulder at us.
"Say what? Y'all from Fall Branch?"
he asks.
"Yes, sir,"
Viola says with a look at me. Wilf nods at her.
"Y'all been seen that there army?"
My noise spikes real loud before I can quiet it, but again, Wilf don't seem to notice. Viola looks at me, worry on her forehead.
"And what arm is that, Wilf?"
she says, the voice missing a little.
"That there army from Cursed Town,"
he says, still driving along like we're talking about vegetables.
"That there army come out of the swamp, come taking settlements, growing as it come. Y'all been seeing that?"
"Where'd you hear about an army, Wilf?"
"Stories," Wilf says. "Stories have come chattering down the river. People talking, you know, stories. Y'all been seeing that?"
I shake my head at Viola, but she says,
"Yeah, we seen it."
Wilf looks back over his shoulder again.
"Is it big?"
"Very big,"
Viola says, looking at him seriously.
"You gotta prepare yourself, Wilf. There's danger coming. You need to warn Broccoli Hills."
"Broccoli Falls,"
Wilf corrects her.
"You gotta warn 'em, Wilf."
We hear Wilf grunt, and then we realize it's a laugh.
"Ain't nobody listen to Wilf. I tell you what,"
he says, almost to himself, then strikes the reins on the oxen again. It takes most of the rest of the afternoon to get to the other side of the plain. Through Viola's binocs, we can see the herd of things still crossing in the distance, from south to north, like they're never going to run out. Wilf don't say nothing more about the army. Viola and I keep our talking to a bare minimum so we don't give any more away. Plus, it's so hard to keep my noise clear, it's taken most of my concentration. Manchi follows along the road, doing his business and sniffing every flower. When the sun is low in the sky, the cart finally creaks to a halt.
"Broccoli Falls,"
Wilf says, nodding his head to where we can see in the distance the river tumbling off a low cliff. There's 15 or 20 buildings gathered around the pond at the bottom of the falls before the river starts up again. A smaller road turns off from this one and leads down to it.
"We're getting off here,"
Viola says, and we hop down, taking our bags from the cart.
"Thought you might,"
Wilf says, looking back over his shoulder at us again.
"Thank you, Wilf,"
she says.
"Welcome,"
he says, staring off into the distance.
"Best take shelter for too long. Gone rain."
Both Viola and me automatically look straight up. There ain't a cloud in the sky. Wilf says.
"No one listen to Wilf."
Viola looks back at him, her voice returning to itself, trying to get the point to him clearly.
"You have to warn them, Wilf. Please. If you're hearing that an army's coming, then you're right and people have to be ready."
All Wilf says is,
"Mm-hmm,"
again, before snapping the reins and turning the oxen down the split road toward Broccoli Falls. He don't even look back once. We watch him go for a while, and then turn back to our own road.
"Ow,"
Viola says, stretching out her legs as she steps forward.
"I know,"
I say.
"Mine too."
"You think he was right?" Viola says.
"About what?"
"About the army getting bigger as it marches." She imitates his voice again.
"Grown as it come."
"How do you do that?" I ask.
"You're not even from here."
She shrugs.
A game I used to play with my mother, she says, telling a story using different voices for every character.
Can you do my voice? I ask.